Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome back to As It Is. We are here 7 days a week to help you learn and improve your American English. At the same time, we tell you about important events that are taking place in our world. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we begin with a story about converting a common plant into fuel. Then, we will meet a woman who thinks she can contact people who have died, but she uses her skill to help the living. Now, let's get started with part one. An airplane maker, an airline, and a biofuel company are working together to make fuel from tobacco plant seed oil. The companies are Boeing, South African Airways, and Sky NRG. They are using a new tobacco plant known as Solaris. The Dutch biofuel company, Sky NRG, developed the plant. It contains less of the drug nicotine than traditional tobacco. Christopher Cruz is here with more details.
Julie Felgar works on environmental issues for Boeing. She said the plant also has many more seeds than traditional tobacco plants do. She said only the oil from the seeds will be used to make biofuel now, but researchers are trying to develop ways to use the entire plant to make fuel. The companies expect the tobacco seed biofuel to be produced in the next few years. Boeing said test farming of the plants is happening in South Africa now. The company said both small and large farms are involved. There are two major reasons companies are developing biofuels. The first is the growing price of aviation fuel over the past 10 years. Second, airlines want to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide they release into the air. The gas is linked to rises in atmospheric temperature. Boeing said biofuels could reduce carbon releases from planes by 50 to 80%. So tobacco will not meet much of the fuel demand. But experts believe it will help to increase the use of biofuels in the industry. Today, biofuels are used on a very small number of flights. Ms. Felgar said it is difficult to predict when most of the world's airlines will begin to use biofuels. But she said developments over the past 7 to 8 years suggest that time is near. Boeing said airlines have flown more than 1,500 flights using biofuel since its use was approved in 2011. There is criticism of biofuels. Some people argue water and land used to grow plants for fuel should grow food crops instead. Critics also fear widespread use of plants to make biofuels will cause an increase in food prices. Ms. Felgar said Boeing is working to ensure its biofuel comes from plants that are not used as food crops. She said South Africa was a good place to begin the use of biofuels in large passenger planes. She says South African Airlines is very progressive in its support for the environment. And she said biofuel production there will help rural tobacco farmers who have been hurt by decreasing demand for their crop. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to As It Is from VOA. All humans share two life events, birth and death. However, people deal with death in many different ways. Culture, religion, personal beliefs, and fear all influence our reactions. Sometimes death seems so sad and terrible that we look for help, for comfort, sometimes in unusual ways. Ana Mateo tells us about one of those ways.
Abigail McCarthy remembers awakening and walking outside her bedroom one night during childhood in Johannesburg, South Africa.
As a small child, I remember in the house we were staying in, stayed in quite an old house, and waking up and there was a woman at the top of the passage, thinking it was my mother calling for her. And when she turned round, I saw it wasn't my mother.
Later, people told her that the woman she said she saw had died in the house years before. Today, Abigail McCarthy is in her early 40s, with long dark hair and intense blue-green eyes. She was about 6 years old when she believes she started seeing dead people. She says that at first, she felt very afraid of talking with what she calls spirits of the dead. But she got over her fear. She became a medium, a person in the middle, so to speak, of the world of the living and the world of the dead. She says being a medium, a bridge to the afterlife, did not come easy to her. She says the more contact she had with the dead, the more she understood that she was helping people deal with death. Ms. McCarthy says that people often struggle to accept the deaths of their loved ones. This is especially true of those who die in terrible circumstances or terrible situations. Ms. McCarthy now works as a medium at a spiritual healing center in Johannesburg. There, she has dealt with people at the lowest points in their lives. People who have lost their life partners, or parents who have lost all their children in auto accidents. Ms. McCarthy says her clients often ask her to finish unfinished business. Things like unsettled anger or hurtful words that may have been said. Some people come to her looking for forgiveness. Abigail McCarthy says her communication with dead people begins on a blank, empty page. She asks her clients, people who come to her, to tell as little as possible about the person they want her to reach. Then she says she just starts talking. She says she does not really see dead people in the room. Instead, she says she feels their presence and sees them in her mind. She adds that what she sees is not like in the movies.
I literally see in my mind a person or a place or how they look, what they're wearing, what they are saying or trying to give across. No, nothing bizarre happens. No, the room doesn't shake. Things aren't knocked over.
Ms. McCarthy does not hurry to call her so-called ability to communicate with dead people a gift.
I hesitate to call it a gift, but maybe. I do believe we've all got our gifts. I don't agree that it's something that's special or that you're above others.
Some religions condemn or forbid attempts to contact dead people. And even working with a medium is considered a sin. Ms. McCarthy says that in the past, she often wished that she was not a medium. She wished she had a more normal career. But she says she has learned to accept her ability. And she says she enjoys helping other people. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for spending some time with us today. As It is part of Learning English. And that is part of The Voice of America.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Economists have studied how markets work for a long time. Generally, they work well. But markets do not always perform as expected. Jean Tirole of France won the Nobel Prize in Economics for studying why markets are imperfect or inefficient and what governments can do to regulate them. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences announced the $1.1 million prize in Stockholm on Monday. It called Mr. Tirole one of the most influential economists of our time. The organization said he had done important research in a number of areas. But it said, most of all, he has clarified how to understand and regulate industries with only a few powerful firms. A small number of companies that control an industry is called an oligopoly. For about 30 years, Mr. Tirole has researched periods when markets fail, that is, when they did not provide good results in price and competition. He looked at how a small number of large companies, or even a single company, can strongly influence industries. Banking and telecommunications were among the industries he studied. The Nobel Committee said that unregulated markets often produce socially undesirable results. They can result in higher prices, or companies that use their market position to block others. The committee said it chose Mr. Tirole because he thought about how best to regulate markets. For example, Tor Ellingson said Mr. Tirole showed the need to develop better rules for the banking industry. This gained urgency after the world financial crisis of 2008-2009. Mr. Ellingson is chairman of the committee that awards the Economics Prize.
Jean Tirole is really trying to understand what is it that drives the owners of banks? What are their objectives? And what are they driven to do if regulation is very lax? And he then comes to the conclusion that what they are driven to do is to take risks that are far too large from the point of view of the public interest. So there needs to be a tougher regulatory regime, in particular for investment banks.
Mr. Tirole works at the Toulouse School of Economics in Toulouse, France. He is 61 years old. The Economics Prize is called the Bank of Sweden Prize in Economic Sciences in memory of Alfred Nobel. Alfred Nobel did not establish the prize. It was first presented in 1969. The Nobel Economics Prize will be presented at a ceremony in Stockholm, Sweden, on December 10th. And that's the VOA Learning English Economics Report. You can find more of our programs at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced its nominees for induction this year. The 15 choices cover more than 50 years in music. They are Britons, Germans, and Americans from across the United States. The nominees also represent many styles of rock and roll, including blues, disco, electronic, hip-hop, and punk. We polled Learning English staff members to find out which artists they would choose to enter the Hall of Fame this year. Each staffer could only choose one, but several chose the same artists. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame officials nominated Green Day, the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, Chic, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and Kraftwerk. Also included were the Marvelettes, NWA, Nine Inch Nails, the Spinners, and the Smiths. But none of those artists made the Learning English winners list. Here are our choices. I'll start with myself. I selected War, a California band that could not have been from any other state. Its sound defines California coastal cool. But the band combines styles from all over. You can hear Caribbean reggae, Latin beats, funk, and rhythm and blues in War performances. War was most active in the 1970s, but to me, its music is timeless. A favorite song is Low Rider from 1975. Adam Brock, Roger Sue, and Anna Mateo went with Lou Reed. Anna had the hardest time deciding of all of us. She was torn by her love for the Spinners. But in the end, she said she had to go with Reed because she is also a fan of his wife, musician Laurie Anderson. Lou Reed was a founding member of the influential 1960s band, The Velvet Underground. He also had a long and successful solo career. Reed died in October of last year. In reporting his death, Rolling Stone magazine described Reed's musical gift. It said, "It was marrying beauty with noise, while bringing a whole new lyrical honesty to rock and roll poetry." His most famous song was 1972's Walk on the Wild Side.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, "Hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side." Said, "Hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side."
Chris Cruz and Mario Ritter were pretty quick with their choice. Both Learning English staffers chose blues musician Stevie Ray Vaughan. Vaughan's career was short-lived. He died in a helicopter crash in 1990. He was only 35 years old. Vaughn had recorded just 5 albums. However, he had also gained fame and widespread industry respect as a great blues guitarist. Staffers Marcia James, Jill Robbins, and Jerry Watson are Sting fans. The British rocker is already honored at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of the group The Police. He is also a member of the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Sting, solo and with The Police, has won 16 Grammy Awards. He has 11 albums under his own name and 5 with his former band. Jill Robbins says her favorite Sting song is Fields of Gold.
You'll remember me when the west wind moves upon the fields of barley. You'll forget the sun in his jealous sky as we walk in fields of gold.
We will end with the pick from staffer Jonathan Evans. We have more respect for his choice because he is an actual musician. Jonathan plays trombone, as well as a little piano, bass, and trumpet. He is also a singer in a band. And his choice for the Hall of Fame is Bill Withers. The singer-songwriter had many hits during his 15 years in the music industry. And he is an extremely popular artist to cover. Artists as different as Fiona Apple, Widespread Panic, Mick Jagger, and Garth Brooks have recorded versions of Bill Withers' songs. Bill Withers' many hits include Lean on Me and Lovely Day. But it all started with a song that perfectly expresses what it is like to miss someone. Bill Withers released Ain't No Sunshine in 1971.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long anytime she goes away.
So what do you think of the Learning English musical opinions? Who would you choose to enter the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Is there a band or an artist who was not nominated that you think should have been nominated? Let us know. Send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. We'd love to hear from you. An artist in Oakland, California, is using his skills to help the homeless. Greg Klain builds very small shelters that make life on the streets a little more comfortable. The structures offer the homeless some safety and protection from bad weather. The little houses also have wheels on the bottom, so they can go wherever their owner goes. Greg Klain has given away at least 20 tiny houses. Several are on the roadside near an active railroad. On a recent day, Mr. Klain stops at one to visit Oscar Young. The two men hug.
I like to help him, sure. I mean, it's fun for me. I like to make things, and to do something that makes a big impact in someone's life is good.
Inside his little shelter, Mr. Young gets relief from cold nights on the streets.
Well, it's better than living on the ground, to tell you the truth, because if it wasn't for Greg, I would be still on the ground.
Mr. Klain also visits Sweet Pea, another friend who also lives in one of the little homes the artist built. She says it keeps her safe and protects her belongings.
I love my house. Thank you.
In the mornings, Mr. Klain searches the streets for building materials. He gathers what he can and takes it to his studio. There, he puts the houses together.
I mean, I've been in the middle of a building process, run out of materials, gotten in my truck, drove around to look for something as my shopping.
A cabinet door becomes a window cover. Pallets, flat wooden structures used in transport and storage, become walls.
Here's a pallet. The top is a door.
The artist also attaches a small electrical device to the house. The device is powered by the sun.
I put it on a light, you know, an old lamp, so you could move it around. You can keep it optimum just to the sun.
Empty coffee bags become roof material. A washing machine door and refrigerator part become windows. Nails, screws, and the sticky substance glue hold all the pieces together.
Kind of call them the fruits of the urban jungle. You know, here's what's dropping. Here's these natural resources that we can use.
Some of the people living on the streets once had normal houses of their own. But Sheila Williams says she has learned to live with less.
I had it all just like you people do out there. But now look at me now. I'm living in one of Greg's houses, and I'm thankful to that man.
The Klain homeowners have collected wood and other found materials for future building efforts. Sheila Williams gives the artist a picture of flowers that looks almost new.
So yes, when I finish the homes off, sometimes they come with artwork, everything installed.
Mr. Klain says his work is not a social project. He says he is just someone using his skills to help his homeless neighbors. Graffiti is an illegal form of artistic expression. Graffiti artists are usually young people who use a kind of paint that is sprayed from a can. They illegally paint words and pictures on the sides of buildings, especially in low-income neighborhoods. Some cities are fighting the graffiti artists with education and possibilities instead of punishment. In Washington, D.C., officials are working with graffiti artists to help make the city more beautiful. About 12 young artists have gathered at a workshop in downtown Washington. They are learning how to use spray paint to make graffiti that people will want to see. Michelle Chen is one of the artists.
So at first, you know, it seemed like a very sort of crude instrument, but just being able to see what artists are able to do with it, it's really amazing.
They practice on small walls. They are taught by Eric Ricks. He is a graffiti artist from Liberia. He used to paint on buildings illegally, but now the city is paying him to teach young people.
It's one of those things I love to share and to see young people pick it up with the passion that I myself had, because I feel like I'm a big kid just as much as any one of them.
The program is called Murals DC. City officials created it to try to solve the graffiti problem. The program provides the young people 10 weeks of training. After the training, the students travel with Mr. Ricks to a neighborhood in the north of the city. They will create a large painting called a mural on a wall that once had unappealing graffiti. The city has paid for 50 such artworks since the program began in 2007. I'm Katie Weaver.